I have to put up the one light just so you can see our faces. Fell down.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
There we go. So that one matters.
Hey, there we go. All right. Instagram should be live soon. I'm probably going to stand. Go live. Sweet. So we're live there. We're live here. We're live everywhere.
We are live.
Sweet. Pull this over. Minimize this. All right. Shit. So today we are with Bill and Bill Womack, right? Very cool. We are going to be discussing his journey, and he is the father of a veteran. In fact, he is the father of Rocco.
Me!
And he wanted to come on and share his journey today with us. He is he's an alcoholic recovered and will be on that journey for the rest of his life. And he wanted to share why he did it in the moment he was for his life. And he wants to share what alcohol was doing to him in his life. And am I about hitting it right, Bill?
Kind of, yeah.
All right, great. So for all the things that I missed, we hopefully will get a lot more detail from you. And I am going to let you talk a lot. However, I will interrupt you sometimes to ask you questions about things that you said that might pique my interest and have you dive into it a little bit deeper. And then I'll get you back on track after that. How's that sound?
I love a dialogue.
Love it, baby. We're definitely going to have one. We're definitely going to have a really, really good dialogue. I can feel that today. So why don't you start with this? Tell us who you are. Tell us where you're from and where you grew up, things like that. I would love to get the full spectrum of Bill in this hour.
I started as the product of a broken family, which is not abnormal. My life was good. I loved my dad. We had stepbrothers and sisters. It was hectic. Coming from a broken family, everything is a little bit hectic. So rules weren't as tight as you would want them to be. And I'm a big rule guy. So my first experience with drugs and alcohol came in the second grade when one of my brothers came to the door and said, I got a bone to pick with you. And it turned out to be him smoking pot. Now, Tony could tell you about my birth mother. She had her own problems, so she wasn't as responsible as a normal parent should be. So that time frame, she allowed us to smoke pot around her and smoke cigarettes and drink.
Right.
It always was, if I'm going to have fun, alcohol or drugs are going to be involved. That's how life turned for me. And Tony can tell you, like, you know, even though I tried to be a normal person, I had a great job, I had a great family, you know, Christmas Eve would come, it'd be a drinking event. You know, it'd be a party. The alcohol right. would come out, the blood would come out. No, you got to do a shot. But I wasn't out of control yet. I had a great life. I had a house. I had two kids. I had two dogs. I had a wife. It looked great from the outside.
Right.
I tried my best. And I don't regret much of what I did because I think I raised two boys that are sensitive and good people. But I feel I could have done better. And that was because of partying a little bit. Then time goes on a little bit farther. I got sick. My marriage was falling apart. One of the biggest regrets I had is talking to the boys and telling them that the only reason I was with their mom was because of them. you know, putting them on the hook for guilt. And it's none of their guilt. It was all my dumbass decisions, right? But alcohol and drugs talk to you in a way that you can believe your own bullshit. And you do. And I'll tell you, I love my kids. The only thing I love a little bit more are grandkids, honestly. And, you know, nothing's... My dad called me up daily to, you know, to talk to me. I call my son and daughter-in-law. I mean, sometimes I worry that I'm calling them too much. But back to the backstory. So I retired early. I had a great job. My job was like retirement. It wasn't like retirement. It was, yeah, it was like retirement. I worked at Harley until almost 20 years. I worked at Harley. Barbs. And then I worked at Mercedes-Benz as a wholesale parts manager. The gig paid a lot of money. It wasn't tough work. It was from 8 till 5 o'clock at night. It was a good job. I got paid well. I could afford my bills. I had tons of money to get extras. And I loved my life, but then it crumbled. And that's what happens. Like, I was a partier and life crumbled. So what I knew was that alcohol always made me feel good. Alcohol was a party. You know, if I mix it with a couple of Percocets, hell yeah, I can go all night. You know, but it's not the truth, because those problems were still there for me. So I'd wake up from getting hammered, and then there are my problems on my doorstep waiting for me again. And I continued it for a long time. We're talking a good 4 to 5 years of wake up, regret life, start drinking. And I thought I was under control, right? Like, I was still bringing in okay money. I was getting a paycheck pension thing, because it was coming from insurance, not, it wasn't government money. It was government. It was money that I was owed. So I felt pretty good about myself. But I started going downhill. Something that should have given me a clue. And I talked to my son whether, you know, I should bring this up. But so Travis, when he had Travis, him and I were buddies. I used to babysit for him. Him and I would play cars on the couch and stuff. And Travis is still my buddy. Actually, all the kids are my buddy. But, you know, Travis was the first. So there was a time when we were coming over, Tony had to pull me aside and say, "Dad, I love you. Travis loves you to death. But you're coming over hammered. You're not coming over like partying. You're coming over hammered. I can't have that around my son." And to me, because alcohol talks, right? Says, "Yo, what the fuck is he trying to say to me? Does he know who I am? You know, like, you don't see what wrong you're doing. All you see is what you want." Because the biggest thing about hurt feelings and alcohol and drugs is it makes you selfish. You have very little time to think about other people. So All I cared about was myself at that time. And there's no plan that says, "Oh man, you got to go into treatment." You know, my ex-wife and my father had plotted and sent me to detox 3 different times. And every time I went, it was like, "Fuck this." You know, like, why'd they do that to me? So I got out. And then I left my ex-wife. I became a hotel vagrant. So I would travel, because in New Jersey, you can stay at a hotel for 28 days before that you have to move to a different hotel. So I'd go from hotel to hotel because I still had money. You know, I think I got money. I'm okay. I'm cool. I can afford a party. And when I left my ex-wife, I thought I was 25 instead of almost 50, you know? So that went, I got real sick. I broke my neck right before I left my ex-wife. And that wasn't done while drinking. It was just a normal accident. But where the drinking came in from, it was they gave me a neck brace that I had to wear 24/7. And I was way too cool for that neck brace. They gave me a number for therapy while I was drinking. I didn't have time for therapy, you know? So I was in bad shape. I went from a guy who was a buck 87 to a guy that was a buck 45. My arms looked like a pinky sticking out of my sleeve. So that summer of living in hotels, my dad passed. Well, no, first I had a heart attack. I got told I had to have open heart surgery. My dad passed. I pulled everything out of my arm and just lived in his backyard because I was penniless at that point because I had lost my money. And they had to put me in like clothes for the funeral, and I was drunk and hurt. And so then I said stuff to my kids at the funeral, like, well, I don't want you sitting with the family. You're not like part of us. And, you know, and again, it's selfish alcohol talking. Cause I wasn't sober through this. And not that I don't have responsibility, cause I said that shit. And I look at my son now, and it's important for me to tell him every day, I love you. And it's something I do without a hesitation, because I do. You know, they got all my bad feelings. Why can't they get some of my good feelings? They earned it. So after my dad passed, I had to go and have open heart surgery. I went with my aunt, who's a doctor. She was the only person who could take me in. And what happened, I got out of surgery, went to her house. At the hospital, 2 days after open heart surgery, they sent me to her house. The following day, I walked 1.6 miles to get alcohol. And then 1.6 miles at a buck 45, weighing a buck 45, carrying a 12 pack, sitting every like 30 feet, because I was lugging the bag. And I would walk a little bit and then sit. And then I'd walk a little bit and sit. The cops actually came to her house and said, who the hell is that staying with you? And so I was caught drinking at her house. She came to me. She goes, I love you, Bill. But you got to realize, my brother, your father, just died. And you want to sit here and die in my house? I can't have it. I can't do it. And it's not because I don't love you. It's just that I got my own feelings and I cannot live with myself if I let you die here. So she drove me to a hotel crying the whole time. Everyone talks in recovery about having a moment of clarity. I don't know if it's a moment of clarity, but it's a moment of regret, right? Like you look at what you've done. You look how you affected people. You look that you're lonely. I mean, I would wake up. Oh, when's Travis getting here? When's Travis getting here? When's Travis getting here? Now I woke up just, oh, how am I going to get liquor? What am I going to do? You know? So I checked into rehab. I checked into rehab October 24th, 2018. Went through rehab good, went to a recovery house. What in rehab, I tell people, because I work in a rehab now, you could hear one thing that could save your life. Because I was dead. If I continued partying and drinking the way I was dead. You can ask Tony. He'd see me. I, you know, me at a buck 45, I'm a walking skeleton.
Yeah, you wouldn't have made it nearly as long as you have.
So, and I'm sick. I'm not like, I have diabetes, Crohn's, heart disease, a blood disorder that has my nervous system shot. But I'll get in that later. You know, so I would have died. That's a guarantee. But in rehab, this old guy came in and he was talking about his relationship with his kids and grandkids. And I thought about it and I was like thinking of Travis and I was thinking of Tony and, you know, like, I mean, some of it was embarrassing. I was sick, right? But I remember times when Tony had to grab the front of my shirt so I didn't collapse in front of him. Mm. He's my son. Why does he deserve that? Right? Mm. He deserves my love and my attention, not me being a derelict in front of him. And I say that because I was. And if you knew our history, we would sit, we would shoot water guns in and out of the house, shooting from windows at each other, playing. You know, we had, right? You know, because everybody's had is different. But I had smiles, and I remembered them in rehab, and I wanted them back. And then people say I worked my ass off, because I get a lot of people, my friends are guys with 42, 50 years. Actually, when Tony brought this up to me, I have a veteran that is 43 years that I talk to constantly. He went to Vietnam. And I was like, you sure you don't want this guy? This guy's like the best. You know, because he helped me get sober. But I worked my ass off. I started volunteering right out of rehab. I'm privileged because I make a pension. I didn't need to be making money and I didn't need to go to a job. But, you know, volunteering could be just as simple or, you know, helping somebody could be as simple as opening a door and getting that smile and feeling grateful for that smile. Like how many times you've been at Wawa, right? You hold the door open for a dude and you just get a smile and that like sets a nice tone for the day. So you don't have to be a volunteer to help people. But that's what I did as I started helping people. I'm really good at writing resumes. So that was my gig at the volunteering thing and computer work. I'm old, but I'm a little bit more tech savvy than most older people.
Just a little.
And then 6 months to the day, I moved out of the recovery, you know, out of the recovery house. It was my birthday. And I just completed, because I'm a big AA guy. Everybody needs a program. Everybody needs a blueprint. And you guys are in the Army, right? If everybody is milling around not knowing what to do, nothing gets done. You got to have a blueprint, right? You got to have a something you can look at to say, this is what I ought to do. Because giving it to me to figure out things on my own, I'm a failure. I'm walking around in circles just like the guy next to me. So I needed the blueprint at the AA to get me sober or keep me sober, to be honest. So I finished my step things. And then I wanted to rebuild my family life. I called my sons. I called my daughter-in-law. I
will remember that phone call until the day I die.
And it wasn't like I'm sorry. It's that I knew I did this and I know it wasn't right. I'm sorry is the biggest bullshit line in the world, right? Because everybody says, oh, my bad. But when a man looks at another man and says, this is what I did, and I know it was wrong, you know they regret it, in my opinion.
Yep.
And it's been to the racehorses since then, because I've been a happy man. And my happiness doesn't have to be your happiness, right? Because my happiness is calling Travis or Remy or Nolan. Or, you know, I talk to my daughter-in-law. two times a week at least.
More
I
than me.
I got cut down to one day a week, and I started crying to her. But that's how much my family means to me. You know, my grandson's birthday's coming up. I'm a month away from it, and I'm feeling like I'm not ready. You know, I don't have time because it's just something I really want to be a part of and I want to enjoy. So now my time is thinking about others and other things, not thinking, you know, and I'm going to get to the sick thing. I'm sick. I have Crohn's. I have heart disease. My neck, when I came out of rehab, my arm was paralyzed because I broke my C5. And I have a blood disease, so my nervous system shut down. And that's part of what I was telling you about earlier, where I would fall right in front of Tony, because drinking with my disease, I could fall in a second. Now I get a warning, you know, and I have to, and I'm fine. Like, Tony hasn't even had to look at me for years thinking, oh God, this guy's going to drop in my living room. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's selfish too, right? Why did I put my son through the worry? And there's tons of examples. We were at Royal Farms about a year ago, and they were messing up our order and pissing us off. And he was so expecting me to do the absolute wrong thing. And I'm so proud. Because I didn't do the wrong thing. Because I used to do the wrong thing thinking it was the good shit. You know? Yo, look what I just did. But it's not about me, right? It's about someone else. And I can go around hurting people's feelings and kicking at them and pissing on them. But that doesn't make me smile. What makes me smile is when my son, I was on a first date with a woman, right?
Oh boy, here we go.
Fuck me up. He sent me this message. And I don't know if he was cock blocking me or what, but he sent me the most beautiful text about, Dad, you're present. I love you. You don't know how much that means to me. I started crying on my first date with the woman.
Was that a Friday night?
Yes.
It was probably
during the retreat.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. Let's go.
So I'm in a hotel
room. It was in May. It was like May 8th. About to get my
shit. I'm ready to get my shit going on, and he sends me that text. Then I start crying like a baby. So, and that text I do have saved because I talk a little bit at meetings and stuff. And I'll tell you something. I'm sober 5.5 years, a little bit more.
Let's go. But
I smile. That's so important to me. Not that I'm a Fruit Loop, but I smile so much that people think I am.
Not that I'm a Fruit Loop. I love that, dude. You don't gotta be a Fruit Loop to smile. You're just a happy dude.
Whoa, okay, I'm not making a statement about that. I'm just saying, like, you know, those people that are just way too happy and know it's fake.
Yeah,
you but know I that
think
it's
think a, people get it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, now I work at Gaudenzia, and it's a rehab. You get in there, it's not a rich rehab where they have swimming pools. You know, most of the people coming in are homeless, but some are vets that we get. And you know, the biggest thing, and this isn't hard to comprehend, you know how the pyramids were built? On the backs of thousands of men. You do not have to feel like you can do everything by yourself. Everybody needs help. And if there's a, and Tony's done it for me. There was an air conditioner I couldn't pull out of my window. I had no problem asking my son, hey, I can't get it out. Can you help me? But when it comes to our emotions and feelings, we think that that's a different rule book. If you have a boulder of feelings that you can't lift by yourself, it's okay to say, hey, I need help. You know? And I forget where I started with that, but that is such an important thing I've learned in recovery is if I have a situation that's bothering me and getting under my thing, or if I don't know how to deal with something, nobody's original in this world. We may want to look original, but our feelings of loneliness, happiness, sadness, anger, everybody has them. So if you go to somebody who's been through those feelings and ask for a little bit of help, you're doing a smart thing, because
yeah,
nobody can do it alone. And I think feelings and emotions are way harder than building the building. You know, that's why a psychiatrist gets paid so much, I think. I talked a lot. Any questions?
I don't know.
Go ahead. I'm looking for that text.
Honestly, that was a lot. It's a really good summary. It was a really good story. You can tell you've told your story before. That was definitely deep. You know, the goal of this podcast, you know, FML for my life, we really try to get to a point where you talk about how you ended up recognizing you were for your life. Like, what was the moment, you know, that you realized that?
This old guy came in a rehab and told me the relationship he had with his sons and his grandkids, and it kicked me right in the balls. He had what I wanted. It's hard to see when you're wrapped up in me, right? When you're wrapped up in the, oh, fuck, this happened, and how am I going to get out of this, and how am I going to get out of that? And you guys are military men. I think you know that, like, if you look at the obstacles instead of the objective, you're not going to get very far.
Wade, that's a good question.
That's a special moment. So is your family that really had you realize you were for your life. There's a question that came through. Wade is asking you, when and what was your turning point when you realized you weren't faking happy but actually happy?
That's a damn good question.
Yeah, so, Wade has those.
I'm from a biker community, so I didn't know happiness. I guess it was the 6 months when I got my apartment. I didn't get a forgive you from my kids, but I got the burden off my shoulder. Right? Because I looked them in the eye and said, I know what I did. And I know it wasn't right. And again, I think that apologies are bullshit. Acknowledging somebody else's and their feelings, you know, is the point where you start feeling that the burden is over and you can start pushing forward. That very next, I think it was the birthday party I went to. I'm telling you, and I swear to God, I told you earlier, I have summer teeth. All you saw were the gaps between my teeth when I was at Nolan's birthday party, you know, and it hasn't stopped. You know, I date, I get mad. I love dating, but I date, I get mad, I get, you know, whatever.
Dating?
You know, yeah. What?
Like women?
Yeah. My man is a slayer.
If they trounce my feelings, if I'm not happy anymore, boom, you're on the curb. And I don't mean on the curb as in they're my trash or that they're trash. It's just you're not going to be in my place. You know, because nothing is worth my happiness anymore.
There is not, you know, a problem in the world. You've done nothing wrong when you consider what's good and what's bad for your life and get rid of what's bad. There's not a damn thing wrong with that.
No, and look, you know, I barely know you, right? And I forgot your name. It's James. Why do I deserve a better life than you? God loves everybody. I'm not special. All we got to do is just realize the sign. So if somebody's talking that says something smart, listen. If somebody, you know, that's what God does, in my opinion. But God doesn't fix problems for you. God allows you to fix your own problems, right? So he might put, you know, somebody that says something in your way, or put someone who could be really helpful to you in your way, in your path. And that's happened to me. It's uncanny how many people have helped me through my recovery that all I had to do was say, yeah, I accept your help. That's it. As I've gotten more into recovery, now I know when I'm having problems and I have to humble myself a little bit and ask, but is it really humbling? Because again, there's no problem. If you're walking with a cooler down to the beach and it's heavy for what, two guys to carry, Tony will look right over at you and say, yo, James, grab the other end. I need help with this. It's no problem, right? It's so easy to ask for help. But we think when it comes to our emotions that it's different. And we're not that far apart, any human being, than the guy next to us or woman next to us, because women have the same feelings that we do, and I hate it when we try to separate them. Women are people too, right? They have their own anxieties, their own fears, their own happiness, and, you know, they're just people. And all people share emotions. Kind of easy. So I hope I answered your question. When I left, it took me, rehab was hell. I had staples in my chest from open heart surgery, going through rehab, living in a recovery house with six other dudes. It wasn't my idea of a great time, but every day I got a little bit better. Every day I got a little bit healthier. And then all of a sudden I got my own crib. I got the burdens of my past off of my shoulders. And then I could just enjoy.
Started working out.
Yeah, I could take off my shirt and scare some people. No, I'm kidding.
Please don't.
No, but, and really that's part of my recovery too, because, so I went and did all the doctrine that I thought I was too good for when I was drinking. So from rehab, or, you know, so this is physical therapy rehab. The first stuff I bought all had a woman's picture on it. I called Tony up because I was crying. Every single thing that was workout had a woman on it, on the picture. And again, I feel that women are people too. I'm not saying that. But it
it's
could
okay.
have been
Don't defend yourself.
Like, it made me cry because I thought I'm a man. And now I'm working out with a woman's equipment, you know? But now I could work out next to you and feel okay because I, you know, can do a much bigger load. And then I want more and I'm okay with wanting more. Working out has become something I enjoy, something I love.
How do you think that's played a role in your happiness working out?
Oh my God. Have you ever felt good laying in bed?
No.
If you lay in bed, you feel every ache and pain and it just gives. And then you feel it tomorrow.
That's right.
So being in bed is pretty much just giving up. But as soon as you start, like people with arthritis, if they move their hands, and I know this for a fact because I deal with old, the people who advise me are older and they have arthritis. So my guy, Harry, he doesn't whine. He like works out his hand. Right? Like, things happen. But we're people. We're strong. We can get through it. That's why we're not monkeys. We're not animals. We have a brain. We can work through it and get to it.
That's right. Claire wanted to say that Rocco's face says, I love laying in bed.
I was going to say that. I was going to say, you know, sometimes laying in bed's like real nice.
But laying in bed, all you feel is that bed. And if your back aches when you lay to bed, it's not going to feel better when you get up.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
And also,
way.
Wade said, come work out with me, Bill. It's six-pack summer, not beer.
Hell yeah. You got to be able to get women.
Oh.
I'm on a mission. From God.
I love it.
No, I'm kidding. No, I like it. Dating and I'm single again. And I got a wicked-ass pool over here at the Penwood Crossing.
You have a pool?
It's bigger than an Olympic pool. Tony's been in it. It's huge.
Wait, where?
Pretty big.
Penwood Crossing.
Penwood Crossing?
What is Penwood Crossing?
Yeah. It's a... they call it a manufactured home community.
Oh.
It's an upper scale trailer park. But I was born for a trailer park.
He loves his place.
No, he
loves his place.
No, I'm telling you, I loved a trailer park. So I grew up in Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm more comfortable in a trailer park than I am in a mansion for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be what you like. It's what I like. And you can like whatever you like, and it's okay.
Yeah.
For me, for sure. I was meant for this life. And I'm okay. I can sit out front. I just watched a raven go by. Where the hell can you do that?
Where's your cat?
Oh, when I was drinking, I didn't even notice ravens were around.
Yeah, I love ravens.
God gives you really real pretty stuff. We got to recognize it. God gives us help. We got to recognize it. That's where your choice, right? Your choice.
Wade said, Bill, you are a red-blooded bachelor. We need you in office. I'll vote for free pool accommodations. What up, Zach? Good to see you, brother. But yeah,
my past would not hold up to anybody's.
What's that?
My past would not hold up to scrutiny.
Yeah. Yeah, I find your story to be pretty fascinating because it's one that it's really synonymous with so many other people in recovery. And the thing that you kept on alluding to without like saying it directly is selfishness, you know, and like that word, when it comes to like drinking and using something, like it becomes all about you and it becomes like you're just tied to this thing that you feel like you need to fill your void with, whatever that void is. And for you, it sounds like the void was decisions in the past that you made and how you treated people. And that really messed you up because you wanted to treat, you know, Rocco or AKA Tony better, his family, your grandkids, his wife, his amazing wife, Claire, like all of that. And you went after the goal of changing your life to build a better relationship with your family. And honestly, that is, I don't know if I'm hitting it or summing it up properly, but that to me, that's what I heard. You know, you defeated selfishness and overcame, and now you're looking at the world in a different view with like gratefulness, and you're just grateful to see a raven fly by your face. You're grateful to be outside and underneath of a tree. You're in your trailer park. You're happy about that. I love that. You know, you're working out. You're finding out that endorphins are better to be addicted to than anything else.
Aren't they though?
Yeah. Yeah. No, really they are. You're replacing a negative addiction with a positive addiction. That's great.
Love.
And love. And you also are focused on a lot of love too in your family and your life.
Now, can I say something about selfish though?
Yeah, of course you can.
What I define do today is beyond selfish, right? Because everything I do gets me a good benefit. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, right? And I can say this to anybody, there's times when you've helped a person that was down and they smiled and said thank you. And that thank you makes you feel so good, right?
Sure does.
So that's a selfish feeling because I love that. I don't have to tell you what I've done. I just love that feeling. That helps me smile. You can live in that feeling 24/7. You can open a door and smile at somebody and maybe change their day. You can be it. And it feels good. And it's selfish. It is selfish wanting to feel good. Right? So it's a line. So there's a selfish line that I only want to do for myself. Well, fuck that guy. He can't open a door. That's his problem. But then there's the selfishness of, God, I love the way it feels when someone really is happy I exist. Right? I hope I'm not, you know, these are my own opinions.
So I'm not too far off from what you're saying, actually. I do for a lot of other people, and you know, I'm not gonna bring up specifics, but you know, if you're out there watching and you know, I'm talking about you. I do for a lot of people, and I agree it's selfish, but it's a good selfish.
Isn't that selfless?
It's selfish because you're doing it for the achievement.
You're getting
of
the benefit.
How you feel.
You feel that.
You're benefiting from it. So my whole thing is I like doing for other people. I like doing for other people, not so they are happy that I exist. I do for other people so that whoever I'm doing for is like, wow, somebody gives a shit.
Right.
In this world full of fucking people in their own goddamn lives, somebody cares enough to give a shit about me.
And it
makes that makes me
feel
wonderful.
And that's self, right? That's about self.
That, I mean, in a very loose term, yes, it's a good selfish. There's no thankless job, right?
I wrote about this concept before when I was like 24, 23 years old, and I need to find it somewhere. I wrote about the concept. I remember having a philosophical debate with myself, and it's like a 3-page, 4-page essay that I wrote out of the story of helping the woman on the train. I'll have to find that and share it with you at some point. I'm borderline agreeing with Wade here, like selfishly selfless. I don't know if that's, I don't know. It's just like, for me, when it comes to that, it sounds like you're describing selflessness and being happy with self, being selfless. And that's selfishness to me. It's not selfish to want to help others and feel good about it. That's the reward of being selfless. That's how I kind of look at it. Personally, that's like the, and again, you don't have to agree with shit. I know Rocco doesn't agree with me. He's already shaking his head. No, but
you said it yourself. It's the reward of being selfless.
It's the reward of it. Reward.
Yeah. But I don't like the idea of that being selfish, because selfish is a negative connotation. Selfish is self-centered. Like you would, if you're doing that selfishly, to me, you would expect something back. I actually had a conversation with somebody about this too before, where they expect something in return. That makes it selfish. You aren't expecting anything in return. Wait, I mean, I'll argue with you. You're still wrong about pride, and so are you. I actually have better, arguments now for that. But I definitely know that selflessness is a beautiful thing, because it is giving you that reward. Selfish, you're not selfish, Bill. Like, you're a good dude doing what you're doing. And I know what you're trying to say. I do understand what you guys are trying to say. I just don't agree with the use of it. That's all.
I don't agree with the use of calling it selfish.
Well, and I want to bring
that's
up
right. That's what I'm saying. It's selfless. That is the word. It's selfless.
It's not selfless because you're seeking something in return. You're not that feeling.
Selfishness is seeking something in return. Selflessness is not. It is just a byproduct of being selfless that you get a good feeling.
Let me ask you a question. If you open that door for somebody and you smile at them and you're hoping that that you change their day, but they don't even look at you, they don't say thank you, they don't smile back, and they just walk by like they need it, does that change how you feel?
What'd you say?
That's selfless, because when the guy, and with the disappointment that you feel when they don't smile, but you do it anyway, that's selfless.
Yeah, because you're not attaching your pride to it. You did it because you wanted to do it for that person. And that's selfless, 100%. And if it's selfishness is you expect something in return and pride is tied to it, and now you're getting hurt and taking it personal. Right, exactly, because we did it regardless of the outcome is. Right, exactly. And that's selfless. So you're a selfless person, Bill. I really appreciate the fact that you're doing this with a selflessness to you. And that's humble too, right? And that's a great thing. And I genuinely believe is not selfish. Selfishness is not a part of this. You're changing your life for the better, and you want to be a selfless person who does good for others no matter what, right? I can tell you that me personally, like, I try to live a selfless life constantly, and like live a life where it's like I will hold the door for somebody. And they, a lot of the times, especially in Philadelphia, you don't get the thank you, whatever. And like people just freaking walk right in. They're on their phones, whatever. That's okay by me. I helped out that person. I don't care. Like I held the door to hold the door for that person. Right. And that's just a small example.
Enjoying when you're rewarded for it.
Because I know it makes me happy. That's selfish. Yet I know I may not have enough. That's selfish. That's not. Wade, you're actually manipulating the two words. That's not true. You are selflessly giving it no matter what to that person, being a kind person. It's not selfish. Making you happy. It's a byproduct of being selfless is happiness. That you're trying to create an argument there that isn't lining up. I mean, like, it's just twisting words.
I think where the gap is here is we're not trying to say
selfishness.
We're not trying to say that what it is a bad thing.
Right.
We can only use the selfish word because it's the defined word. There's no other word for that feeling.
Yes, there is. It's selflessness.
No, selflessness is doing unto others and expecting nothing in return.
That's right.
We are saying that we are doing for others.
But there's always a byproduct because you're a human being.
That other people understand that they exist.
I will always disagree. It is just a byproduct of being good, being a good person.
Can I talk selflessness? That's really important.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
If people are watching this and they're in recovery, or even if they're in mental recovery, another thing is you do have to be selfish. There's going to be times that you're going to have to step over a log that's dragging you down. If somebody has, you know, if you're attached to a ball and chain, and I'm not saying a spouse, I'm talking about if you have a friend and you're both on drugs and you're both drinking, or you're both feeling crappy and always depressed, if that person is going to constantly try to bring you down to their level, you got to be selfish and step over them. You know, because in addiction, misery loves company.
No, I'm beginning to recognize something.
You have to get yourself healthy. I don't agree
with it, but I understand what he's saying.
And you can go back and get that guy, right? You can go back and try and help him. But if somebody's trying to drag you down with them, and here's what happens a lot. I see it happen daily. A guy will leave rehab. He will convince two other people to go with him. You know, because he doesn't want to do it alone. But you got to step over. You know, you got to say, this is about me. And then essentially about my family. Then essentially about my friends. If you want me to go out and, you know, push my disease a little bit more, because I swear to God, I feel that addiction is a disease. They talk about it with the endorphins and receptors in your head that never go back, with tobacco and all this other stuff. So we're learning a lot that a guy wrote in a book in 1930 something. I'm not the best brain guy, so dates and stuff I can't give you great. But like a guy wrote that, like the Dr. Bob, you know, in AA, wrote that, you know, it's an allergy and a sickness that we have to alcohol, that we crave something that makes us, you know, our allergy is that alcohol makes us act different than other people. But the addiction part of it is a disease as well, in that we have a craving for it that we can never shut off. And now we're learning that these, like, receptors in our brains are, they, so the ones that really enjoy tobacco never change. They're always there. And they're always craving tobacco. So if they smell tobacco, if they get the, you know, a hint of it, they want it. So it is a disease, as bad as cancer or anything you want to put out there. So knowing that it's that difficult, that tough, if somebody is trying to bring you with them down or down with them, you got to just step over and say, this is about me getting healthy. I'll get good. I'll try to come back for you, because you don't forget about the person.
At that point, it's more about self-preservation than it is selfishness, though.
But so here's the thing. Here's the thing with that. Inside of the that, I completely agree with you. However, this is the tactic that's being used, right? So if I'm the leader of AA and I'm the psychologist or whomever of AA, and talking to a person about it and trying to get them to understand a concept that they do understand, because you are already selfish in this, in the way that you were genuinely seeking something constantly with the alcohol, you need to take that word, twist a very negative word, try to make it positive in this instance, and make it something relatable that they understand. It's a simple word to understand and concept to understand. The concept sometimes to communicate to other people that you have to create so they can get through whatever they're going through. You have to bring it down to the equals MC squared level, right? So it's actually such a simple concept for anybody to get at any level of understanding, whether you are a 5-year-old or an adult, you will understand what that is. So they use that concept as the bridge, the selfish concept. That's, I just figured out why I don't agree with it, but I understand why it's being used because it's a simple concept, right? So that is a great example for sure, Bill. And I am agreeing to disagree with you right now. I understand why you're using it and why they're saying that and why you say that. I actually do. It's a great. Selfish. What's that?
James, you're hooked on the selfish. But if you do something.
No, I'm not. No, hear me out real quick. I'm actually, the concept of it, I totally get. I genuinely do. It makes sense. It really does. Self-love. Yeah, sure. I guess. But that concept is definitely, it works. That's real. I get it. Yep.
Yeah, and we're learning now, right, that a little bit of now, that's what the person said, self-love, but it's actually called self-care. So you can take the word selfish and say it's self-care, okay? And, you know, we all know if we go lay in a suntan or something that we enjoy doing, because I love listening to, like, heavy metal and, you know, sitting out in the sun. Metal. So for me, that's meditation, and I do it for self, right? And it helps me get to where I want to be. I lost my train of thought because I'm old. Damn it. That's my dementia is sticking in, Claire.
She's in here.
I know. That's why I said it to her. And she's laughing.
The story still for you and continuing your journey. What part of your journey are you on now where, like, what is the thing that you might still struggle with that you have to battle every day? That other, and how do you defeat it? and how can you teach others, I guess, through that story, you know, how you do it every day?
So you just disturbed me because I have a, I have a ball and chain that I have a terrible time with, and it's called anger. I love feeling that I'm superior. I love feeling that I'm better than you. I love, and Tony can tell you, there's thousands of ways I used to talk down to people, be threatening to people. And I don't want to be that man anymore. I want to be the man that my, like, my grandkids are going to talk about, man, Pop-Pop was the best. I remember when he did this. I remember when he did that. But never do I want him to be them seeing me do something where I'm putting somebody else down or making anyone else feel less than to make my, I want them to remember me that. And I think that's part of like God, right? Because I want to be, I want to live forever. And the way I'm going to live forever for me is that when I'm gone, my kids, my grandkids will remember the stuff and the way I made them feel in a good, positive way. That, to me, that's living on. It doesn't have to be yours. It's mine. And I want, I just want forever that my family can look at me and say, that's my pop. That's all. That's what I strive. So if I'm on a YouTube video, cursing out a guy, and it was possible, it really was possible. If I'm beating up somebody because I think I can, you know, I'm right because I'm tougher, I'm giving them the wrong opinion. I want my family to think of me as it in a way that I made them feel secure. I made them feel happy. And I do things for my son that, you know, you may hear it and say, oh man, your dad's a Fruit Loop, you know, but I mean it. I'll text them. I told him he looked handsome as shit this morning, you know, and for me, cool. If my son, because I don't think he looks in the mirror and sees how handsome he is. And I'm not
saying I agree with you on that. I don't actually.
So for me, it's important. Man, you look banging. If I look like you, you know how many women's I'd have right now? You know, and I'm okay with that. You know, just letting them know.
Claire.
And that's how I want to be remembered. I don't want to be remembered as, remember when you got in a fight in your backyard
and blooded
the dude and made him bleed? You know, I don't want that. Even though I feel like, because I'll tell you something. Remember when feels really good. Remember when you kicked that guy's ass? Remember when you were a tough guy? That feels really good to me.
It's addicting.
I'm learning as I get older that do you remember when has to take a new meaning, and it's just as good for me. It doesn't have to be good for you. But it's good for me is when my grandson remembers something I did for him. When my son remembers when I made him proud. I think that's a little bit better than kicking somebody's ass, right? Because I made my family feel
good. Yeah.
I love that. That's actually I actually opened up to Claire about that a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, about all that stuff.
And you cannot.
You are handsome. I'd kiss your eyes.
Stop it.
But you can't make other people happy like that when you're on drugs and alcohol.
I dive into those deep blues.
They all leave with that. Drugs and alcohol take all those feelings away.
Hell yeah. You know, it's actually funny. Something I think about a lot is people get really addicted to, I see it actually posted up sometimes and I'm like, yep, that's like one of the true things the internet has posted. People get really addicted to, there's two things: saying what they're going to do and then they never do it. They already got that high of like, oh, I'm gonna be this, and like, I'm gonna do this, and like, they get really excited and people are like, yo, it's great, dude, and like, they get that high of like what they're gonna do and then they never fucking do it. And the other side is like being like, yo, man, remember back in the day, like we did this, that, and the other war stories, if you will. And like, they just get stuck in that time period. It's like, you can't grow beyond that time period. And that you're totally right. Like, that's a real thing. There's Kermit the Frog.
Kermit the Frog.
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely hear you on that. That's a real thing. That is a real thing. You can get addicted to that too.
But there's a ton of
banners actually signed for after Rocco's lies. Hey, yo, Wade, that is some. He spit some game at you there, boy. He said, "So you know what Wade just said?" He said, "What people don't know is the blue in our banner is actually designed after Rocco's eyes." Got him,
Tony. So there was actually drive down there.
What did you say?
What did you say?
I said, Tony, if you want to drive down there, I'm with you.
Oh goodness.
I actually have a question here on Instagram that I found to be really interesting. I gave a response that I think is an answer. I don't know if it's a true answer, but it is an answer. He said, can you really, because it's going back to you talking about like your demons and shit that you were talking about. He said, can you really slay your demons, or is it just a temporary delay of something? And then I said, oh, what do you think? He said, I think it's a temporary delay of the game at hand. And that's when I responded, yeah, and that is why discipline is important, because it's a day in and day out thing. What do you think, Bill?
We already talked about the receptors in your head never go away, right? So those demons will be with you. If I were to pick up a drink, I think I'd be a drunk. So those things don't go away. But what goes away and what changes are our attitudes and our atmosphere. Like, oh my God. Really, Claire? But those attitudes and altitudes will change. You know, what you want when you're an addict is way different than what you want when you're not. So can you keep, so I just talked to my sponsor recently. I was doing 7 days a week at AA. You know, I was doing a meeting a day. You know, for 5 years, that's long. I work in recovery. I've been in there the whole time. So it's hard sometimes. And I just said, hey, do you think I'm good enough to go down to 5 days a week? And he goes, how do you feel about it? Because it's all about how you feel. Everyone's different. As long as we acknowledge those feelings and know that we all have them, our feelings are a little bit different because everybody has different experiences. But the base feeling is still the same. So if I feel that I'm in under control and I'm a happy man at 5 meetings a week instead of 7, God bless me, right? Oh my God, I'm leaving because she's making me uncomfortable.
Well, actually, we are coming up on time, but there's a couple things that I wanted to get out there before we do. And I'm actually glad you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I told James that I was going to do this right before we hopped on here. You know, I do want to let you know, I recognize that I've never said it to you before, but I do forgive you. You know, there's nothing but love here. I'm so proud of the man that you've become. I'm proud of the things that you've overcame. And, you know, you're the best dad and grandfather and father-in-law that any of us could have asked for. And, you know, I forgive you. You know, I don't know if you were longing to hear that or not, but the forgiveness has been there.
You did much more. You just accepted me. That's the thing, is you accepted me back in your heart. You call me up and mess with me and tease with me. That's all I want.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted, and you know, we are on here with you for a reason today. If somebody is out there that is currently struggling with alcoholism or is any struggling addiction. or any addiction, or doesn't know that they're struggling with it yet, what are your words of wisdom? What's your advice? What do you want to say to all of them right now?
Don't keep it inside. Don't run from it. Ask for help. It's a creditor that's never going to go away unless you deal with it. And the only way to deal with it is to get help. And, you know, if they want to reach out to you, they can give you my number or you can give them my number. Because sometimes it is personal. And, you know, just have them text first that, you know, I'm from the refit. Because that's what I ask. Because I'm just like everybody else. If I don't recognize a number, I'm not answering it. Right. I've already been sold that used car warranty 1,000 times. So, you know, just text me that. And all you got to say is Project Refit. I'll know you fit in and I'll call you right back. And you're important. Remember, you're important. The drug and disease, and I'm considering alcohol a drug, does not let you feel like you're important. But God damn it, you're worth it. Looking over your back is not a way to live. You're worth being secure, feeling love, feeling you're just worth it. Everybody is.
Love it.
Yeah, that's the slogan of the day. You're worth it.
You heard it here. You guys are worth it. If you've been sitting there struggling or you don't know you're struggling yet, take a deep look at your life outside from out from your eyes, right? Take a look at yourself from everybody else's eyes and your family and, you know, ask yourself if you do have a problem. If you know you have a problem, you already admitted it. Go out there and get some help. It's a tough journey, but you guys can do it.
It's a fun journey.
I wish my dad was a Project Refit dad. He's mine. You can't have him.
So, I'm an alcoholic. Who wants an alcoholic as a dad?
I have to share him with my wife.
So Wade said, brother, as a child of addiction, I appreciate you both, the compassion and courage from you both. So that's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing your story today. It was definitely, I'll tell you what, it's a journey that you're still on, and I love that. And you're very open, and I love the openness.
A word journey, my man. It's pretty easy. It's a journey of rewards and gifts.
Yep. Especially when you're, you know, looking at it through a really positive, uplifting lens like that. That's the way to do it, right? And I really appreciate that a lot. You know, keep on doing it. Thank you for coming in today and talking to us. Said. And
keep on doing it. And thanks for coming in today.
That was very good, actually. That was funny as shit. But you did bring a tough topic, and you brought the tough topic in a light way, because that's how you're viewing it. It's something that is in your past, and you're moving on from it, and we cannot thank you enough for doing that, man, and being here with us and taking care of Rocco, taking care of Claire and, you know, their babies and being a part of the family. So
they take care of me. You know. And please leave with the feeling that it's a journey, but it's only as tough as you let it be. If you get help, it's a lot easier.
Yes. There was a saying that says men suffer more in imagination than reality. And that is, I think that's what you're trying to say. Is that about what you're trying to say?
No, but yes, it is. And I'm stealing that. It's going to be a Bill Womack quote tomorrow.
I love that. That's Marcus Aurelius. But I will definitely, I'm excited to maybe share this also with some guys that I know in our group that are struggling too. And I hope that they will listen to this full podcast and learn something from you, man. It's really special and it's really important. So
Okay. Don't
ever suffer in silence. I love that. Hell yeah, Todd.
Good shit, Todd.
All right. I'll see everybody later. Thank you so much for your time, Bill. FML, For My Life. come back next week, Thursday. We're almost there at 10 episodes, and we're going to be posting this all over the place. You know, Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, and everything else, and just starting to grow this, continue to grow this thing. So thank you all for tuning in. I think we saw we had like 30 people come through. So it's pretty cool that we continue to grow this out and make it special. All right. See everyone. Peace.